from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in this week for Michael Krasny. In this hour of Forum, with Oakland and San Francisco both having Chinese-American mayors for the first time ever, it seems the Asian community suddenly has political power. But does it really? In this hour of Forum, we'll hear how years of political and civic activism finally paid off in very different ways, with Gene Kwan and Ed Lee becoming mayor in Oakland and San Francisco. Will their stories encourage more Asian Americans to enter politics, and what kind of coalitions will they build? Asian Americans in Bay Area Politics. That's our topic this hour of Forum, and we'll get started right after this. Good morning and welcome to this hour of Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in this week for Michael Krasny. Well, when Edwin Lee replaced Gavin Newsom as mayor of San Francisco last week, joining Gene Kwan in Oakland, the Bay Area suddenly noticed the political visibility of Asian Americans. Lee and Kwan, both Chinese Americans, have been active in local issues for decades, and while they're now in the top jobs in two major cities, they have plenty of company throughout the Bay Area, on city councils, school boards, and in other high-profile government jobs. And this hour, we're looking at what some call Asian power, and others see as the inevitable culmination of changing demographics. Joining me this hour, first, James Lai. He is Associate Professor of Political Science and Ethnic Studies at Santa Clara University and author of Asian American Political Action, a book about minorities in politics. James Lai, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Scott. It's great to be here.
And let me begin just by asking you, what do you see as the significance of having Gene Kwan and Ed Lee in the mayor's offices in those cities?
I think it's very significant in many ways because as the descriptor on this today's show characterizes these two events as kind of this political evolution, and I think for Asian Americans it really is a political evolution. When you think about the significance of having the two highest elected officials in both San Francisco and Oakland being of Asian descent, it really kind of puts everything into perspective in terms of the history of Asian Americans in the Bay Area, and particularly in San Francisco beginning in the 1850s, and the experiences with racism that they encountered with the nativistic movements during this period that culminated in an exclusion of Asians in 1924 with the National Origins Act, which is the first, really the first time in the history of the United States where the U.S. Congress passed any act that really excluded Asians from coming here. And it was the first time and only time that Asians and any group was excluded because of their race from immigrating. And so you had this long period of time between 1924 with the National Origins Act and then some of the revisions of that during World War II. That allowed more Chinese to come here. Then finally in the 1960s, we see this incredible shift with the Immigration Reform Act of 1965 that finally allowed Asian Americans to come here en masse and create communities that we're really seeing as part of this evolution.
Hey, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You know, you just, as I'm listening, I'm thinking, you know, every minority, whether they're, you know, Irish or Asian American, Latino, Vietnamese, whatever it might be, have their own history and how they came to this country and what their history was when they got here. And I wonder if you think, thinking about that Asian American history in this country and in this state in particular, you know, how you think that influenced either the quickness or the slowness or the path of political involvement of Asian Americans in California.
That's a great question. And I think really, it shows how fragmented the community has been, given the fact that we know what really drives the Asian American community and the growth of it and the maturation of it is really immigration. And so when you have a period, Scott, where up until 1924, really, of really exclusion, so you really have no community formation that's sustainable over several generations that you see with European immigrants at this time. And so really the growth happens after 1965, but you do have children of that period before 1965 and grandchildren that, you know, obviously were U.S. citizens that were born here, that were very active in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, that really come out of this tradition of civil rights protest, of creating progressive community-based organizations like the Asian Law Caucus, the Chinatown Community Development Center, Chinese Americans for Affirmative Action, that have trained, I think, a pipeline of progressive activists that are finally coming of age politically. And that's the evolution part that I think really is reflected in what we're seeing now with not just Ed Lee and Gene Kwan, but also, you know, with the grassroots organizations that really, I think, are the unsung heroes.
When you think about the political evolution of different groups in this country, they're often either eras or moments that spurred them into getting involved. You think of African Americans in the civil rights struggle in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. For the gay community, it was in some ways the rise of Anita Bryant in Florida that got people organized, and the Briggs Initiative that was on the ballot in the late 70s here in California. For Latinos, many, it was Prop 187 in the mid-1990s. Is there a similar moment, do you think, for Asian Americans where the light bulb kind of went off and said, hey, we've got to get organized and get involved?
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. I think, you know, this moment that we're experiencing now with these two historic elections really is a culmination of many different factors. And I think, you know, one would be remiss to just assume that political incorporation, beginning with elected representation, as we are seeing, is an overnight process. It's not. It is this gradual progress of grassroots activism, of training candidates in building coalitions, because a lot of these successful Asian American candidates that we talk about today, like Ed Lee and Gene Kwan, are building multiracial coalitions. I think the media likes to frame them as Asian American candidates or Chinese American candidates, but if you really look at the kind of coalitions they've created, both with voters and contributors, it's very multiracial. It's an example of, again, the political maturation, because that wasn't the case, you know, 20 years ago when Asian American candidates were running as kind of outsiders or insurgent candidates that were trying to get on the inside by developing important coalitions and finding interest groups that would support them. Now you're seeing quite the opposite, where they have endorsements from key interest groups, community-based organizations that are multiracial, that are from labor unions to school boards, et cetera, that, you know, we're really seeing, I think, the emergence of what I call, you know, contemporary Asian American elected officials.
Well, and that's a good cue to bring in one young office holder in the South Bay. Evan Lowe is a member of the Campbell City Council, and he joins us now by phone. Evan Lowe, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
You, as I said, are in Campbell, which is a suburb, I guess you could say, of San Francisco or San Jose. It's in Silicon Valley. And I just wonder if you think – you got into politics, of course, at a young age. How old are you now, if you don't mind my asking?
At the ripe age of 27.
27. Okay. So, and you've been mayor of Campbell as the city council, I guess, elected you mayor several years ago, correct?
Yes, that was last year.
And so how does that, do you think, being in the suburbs, how do you think your experience as an Asian American running for office and being in office, how does that differ from, say, an Ed Lee, or maybe that's not a good example, but a Leland Yee, for example, in San Francisco, someone who is in a big city versus a smaller town or a small city like Campbell?
Well, certainly being in the heart of Silicon Valley have similar opportunities and similar challenges. I think it's important to recognize that in the city of Campbell, for example, with a $50 million budget, we still have great responsibilities. And there are similarities as it relates to a smaller city versus that of a large city. And so I think we really need to talk about how we represent the community at large as it relates to the residents and the voters, and delivering the level of service, also representing a level of trust, and also trying to make sure that we're doing the best for our community. So I think there are similar challenges and similar responsibilities as it relates to public service in general. Obviously, at a much larger scale for a bigger city, there are other challenges there as well. But as it relates to the electoral process, we still share similar challenges and responsibilities.
Do you feel that being in a city like Campbell, that you're more focused on kind of the nuts and bolts of government, you know, filling the potholes, so to speak, rather than taking on ideological issues that are sometimes come to the fore in a city like, say, like San Francisco?
Sure. Well, I think I'm from a smaller city. I'm much more biased in that we're more to the ground. In other words, if a resident is upset or if a resident has an issue to share with us, they know where to find us. They know that they can get to us. Whereas in a larger city, it's much more challenging to get in contact with your elected representative from that perspective. So I would argue that I'm much more to the ground. Individuals from the smaller suburbs are much more to the ground and are more interactive on a day-to-day basis with residents.
I know that you're also openly gay, and I wonder if, you know, how that's worked for you in Campbell, if that has created any kind of political cross currents, you know, if you've bumped up against issues where you felt conflicted between what your constituents in Campbell wanted and what you as an openly gay elected official wanted to do, either in terms of a position you took or an issue that came up.
Sure. Well, I think folks now in this day and age don't care if I am gay, only that I'm straight with them on the issues. And I think being not only Asian Pacific Islander, but also a member of the LGBT community shares certain perspectives. That is to say, from my Asian Pacific Islander background, my family faced challenges as it relates to the Chinese Exclusion Act. I'm fourth generation Californian. In my family's day, interracial marriage was not legal. My mother, who is now remarried, is married to a Caucasian. Title of property said Mongoloids cannot own property. And then when it comes down to my generation, fourth generation of Californians, I cannot donate blood as an openly gay man, and I cannot get married myself, although as an official, I am able to marry other people. So I think those things are important to share that lens and that insight as it relates to public policy and how we can continue to try to provide equality and equal rights for everybody.
There is within the Asian American community, and I should say, and we'll get to this, the communities, we should really say, because there's a lot of diversity within the Asian American community. But there are, you know, members of the community that are somewhat conservative. And we saw, for example, a group of Asian Americans, even here in San Francisco, who were part of the Yes on 8 campaign. And I know that you took a position on the city council against Prop 8. What kind of problems, if any, did that create for you?
Well, I think a lot of people, obviously that was a divisive issue, and certainly it upset some people, but it also was the right statement for some. And so when you have something as divisive as Prop 8, it's always going to be a tough issue, but certainly, there were threats of recall in my public capacity, but what's important is that we did the right thing and we took the position that we did, and I think that's important to kind of highlight.
All right. Evan Lowe from the Campbell City Council, thanks for joining us this morning.
Great. Thank you very much.
And joining us now in the studio is Taekoo Lee. He is a professor and chair of the Department of Political Science and a professor of law at UC Berkeley. Good to have you with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Let me ask you, there's a sort of a symbolic aspect to having two Asian American mayors in Oakland and San Francisco, but then there are other real world kind of beyond the symbolism. How do you separate those things? What's the importance of that symbolically, and what's the importance of it in terms of a real, you know, the political involvement and the difference that those folks and those communities can make in politics and policy?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that's often mistaken in thinking about the symbols that represent politics and the actual material benefits that you expect to get out of politicians is that those are two worlds apart. And in a lot of cases, a lot of the symbolic power of having an Asian American person or Chinese American person in a political office is actually material benefits. So, you know, there's a well-established literature, especially with respect to African American politicians, that having a person who looks like you in political office does a great deal to enhance the kinds of things that we think are healthy for democratic politics, like trusting in government, feeling more politically efficacious, being more likely to get out and vote. That's on the voter side, on the citizen side. I think the other perspective is, which you're alluding to, is what are the material benefits that you might expect to get from having a Chinese American or an Asian American mayor? And I think we may be seeing some of that happening even today. The first news item that I woke up to was the fact that Mayor Kwan and Interim Mayor Lee are headed to Washington, D.C. to meet with Hu Jintao. And I think people, you know, might hope that, you know, in that meeting and subsequent meetings that there might be some sort of economic arrangements that could benefit the cities of San Francisco and Oakland as a result of having somebody who could be more of a Pacific Rim mayor as well as, you know, mayor of Oakland and San Francisco. And, you know, any kind of economic benefit that comes to local governments these days is certainly a boon.
Is there a risk, do you think, a downside for anyone who's the first, you know, whether you're the first Asian American, African American, Latino, fill in the blank, governor, senator, Congress member, to go the extra length to be seen as representing everyone and not just representing, you know, the specific community that you come from.
Yeah, I think there's absolutely no question about that. And I think anybody who has a hard time being convinced of that needs only think about the you know, mincing detail with which people have followed every move that President Barack Obama has made as the first president of African descent in this country. The one note of, nuance or caution that I would point to is that if you are the first person of Group X to hold elected office, I think people often think there could be a potentially false trade-off between representing everybody and representing just the people of that one group that you're supposedly descriptively representing as being the first pioneering politician to hold office from that group. And I think often, politicians rarely make that kind of trade-off. They rarely go in there and say, here's my chance to, you know, get all the, political, you know, benefits, you know, and redistribute them solely to my group. I think that's a very inartful way of being a politician. So
not,
I think
not a good recipe for re-election.
No, either. Certainly not. Right.
Yeah. That's Taekyu Lee, professor of political science and a professor of law at UC Berkeley, joining us this hour along with James Lai from Santa Clara University. And we're talking about the evolution of Asian American political influence in the Bay Area and beyond, in California as well. And I'm wondering, you mentioned Barack Obama, Taekyu Lee. And James Lai, what impact do you think having a president who is not only African-American, but who spent time in Indonesia as a kid, grew up in Hawaii. What impact do you think that has, his ascendance has, on other people, in particular Asian-Americans, thinking about politics, either as voters or as candidates, whatever it might be?
I think in many ways it shows that you know, groups that have historically been excluded or disenfranchised can become part of the political power structure and certainly at the highest level. And, you know, the joke with President Obama is that, you know, for a lot of Asian Americans, we see him as arguably the first Pacific Rim president. And, you know, with his experience in Hawaii and his family relations with Indonesia and his stepsister and stepfather, that this is part of kind of this experience that Asian Americans can greatly relate to.
Professor Lee, anything to add to that? Any thoughts about how the Asian American community views the rise of Obama? And did he, in fact, has he drawn people into politics from the Asian American community?
Sure. There's three additional points that I think are important to keep in mind. One is a number of colleagues and I did a survey leading up to the 2008 election where we asked explicitly about this, both with respect to Obama and McCain, because they both have some linkages to Asia. McCain in terms of his military service and also his adopted daughter, and Obama with Indonesia and the Hawaiian connection. And the interesting thing is, for the most part, it didn't affect how Asian American voters thought about the two candidates. The one area where we saw some effect was that Vietnamese American voters seemed somewhat more likely to support McCain when they were cued to McCain's military service in Vietnam. So I think leading up to 2008, we didn't expect that much of an effect of that personal background on the likelihood of Asian American voters to support them. I think since 2008, I think two important things have happened, which I think will crystallize a tighter link in terms of that personal background and the likelihood of Asian American supporters to either be more Democratic or be more supportive of Obama's reelection campaign. One is that Obama has made an unprecedented, for a president, number of key appointments to persons of Asian descent in his White House and in the various agencies of the executive branch. The second is in terms of a lot of the negative attacks that Obama has confronted both in the 2008 election and since becoming president have really been to question his belonging in the United States. And if you think about one of the most specific kinds of stereotypes that are used to cast Asian Americans in negative light, it's the perpetual foreigner stereotype. And, you know, the whole campaign of who is Barack Obama and America First and the movement of the birthers and so on is explicitly a perpetual foreigner frame that's being used to try to guide Americans to think about and to question who Barack Obama is and whether he's constitutionally fit to be president of the United States.
Or is he, the other kind of framing,
right, exactly,
someone outside, exactly, the mainstream. I wonder what you think about, China is, of course, a friend, but also an ally, and also a rival, and increasingly so in terms of the economic issues in particular. It's also a communist country, which seems to matter a lot less than it does for Cuba. We won't go into that. But how do you think that affects the acceptability, if I can use that word, of voters to Asian American candidates? Do you think that the lens through which China, or for that matter Japan, and the legacy of World War II, or even North Korea now with its nuclear ambitions and so on, does that color in any way, do you think, James Lai, the way in which Asian American candidates are viewed?
Absolutely. I think we have to understand kind of these different axes that happen and take shape in generally society. And one of them, as Teiku mentioned, is this idea that Asian Americans have historically and recently still being viewed as perpetual foreigners. And the other issue too, the other dimension, is this idea that Asian Americans are one and the same, that they're very homogenous as a people, right? And so as you can imagine, these dimensions take shape in different ways in which Asian American candidates who run, whether it's in a suburban context, as I talk about, in the Silicon Valley, where they have to be cognizant of these dimensions, because we're seeing globalization take shape and transnational capital and influx of labor and recruited in this area that are shaping and changing communities. From, for example, in suburbs that maybe in the 1980s with the U.S. Census, like Cupertino and Sunnyvale, where it was less than 10% Asian, to now, in the case of Cupertino, an Asian American majority city in 2000. And so you get these kind of dimensions that Asian American candidates running in these contexts have to be very, very conscientious of.
We mentioned Gene Kwan in Oakland, Ed Lee in San Francisco, and Kevin Guillory, my producer, has pointed out to me that also we should not forget the vice mayor of San Jose is Asian American, Madison Nguyen,
right,
and the vice mayor of Fremont is also Asian, Sue Chan, and those are four of the biggest cities in the Bay Area. So it's
right,
easy to forget, for those of us here in San Francisco in particular, to forget about those cities as well.
Absolutely, and that's what I think, lost in this wonderful discussion of Gene Kwan and Ed Lee in kind of this urban context of these large or medium-sized cities, I think is another trend that's happening simultaneously, that we've seen Asian Americans get elected to these key positions, like we just heard from Evan Lowe from Campbell, Asian American mayor, youngest in city of Campbell. This is an example again of Asian Americans not just being successful in these big cities, but really in these suburbs as well. And that, to me, is really exciting. And again, part of that evolution that we began this program talking about is that not only are we seeing immigration trends of Asians and Latin Americans and Central Americans to the big cities, but we're also seeing, I think, growth of communities that are more smaller and medium sized, that are more suburban in nature.
All right. James Lai, Associate Professor of Political Science and Ethnic Studies at Santa Clara University, and Teiku Lee, Professor and Chair of the Department of Political Science and a Professor of Law at UC Berkeley. They'll be with us for the rest of the hour, and we invite you to join us as well. 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. We'd love to get your thoughts about Asian Americans in politics. Does it matter to you what the race of a candidate or elected official is, and if so, how? 866-733-6786. You can also email us. It's forum@kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this morning. In this hour, we're talking about the rising profile of Asian Americans in Bay Area politics with Chinese American mayors now in San Francisco and Oakland and other office holders around the Bay Area. My guest this hour, Teiku Lee, is a professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at UC Berkeley, and James Lai, associate professor of political science and ethnic studies at Santa Clara University. He's also author of Asian American Political Action. Before the the break, we talked briefly about the diversity within the Asian American community. And let me just ask you, Teku Lee, to talk about that a bit. How different are the politics, for example, in the Vietnamese American community versus the Taiwanese or, you know, Chinese communities?
Well, I mean, I think that's a fabulous question, and often the starting point for most people when they think about Asian Americans as a group is how remarkably diverse they are, not only in terms of national origin, but also in terms of cultural practices, religious backgrounds, and socioeconomic class, a lot of the kinds of things that we think matter to the politics that people hold. And so just to give one example, I think one of the canonical features in political science about who votes and who doesn't vote is what their socioeconomic background is like. So the more well-off and the more highly educated people are, the more likely they are to vote. If you try to use that lens to predict which Asians are going to vote and which aren't going to vote, you're not likely to enjoy a great deal of success. So the quick factoid on this is to compare South Asians and Vietnamese Americans. So South Asians are three times more likely to hold a bachelor's degree than are Vietnamese Americans, 75% to about 25%. Yet when you compare voting rates, they're almost identical. And so there's a story that's about the unique experiences of being South Asian in the United States and being Vietnamese in the United States that helps to tell part of that story. And so I think you need to go much deeper than thinking about Asians as a single monolithic group when you're trying to understand their politics.
James Lai, anything to add to that?
No, I think Teku hit it on the head. I mean, I think you've got so many interesting dichotomies within the Asian American community, not just around ethnicity, but around religion, around linguistics, you know, within just the Chinese American community as well. I mean, and then you've got the interesting dichotomy of immigrant and refugee. And like Teku mentioned with Vietnamese Americans, they're a legacy of that refugee experience, just like other Southeast Asian refugees, Hmong Americans, and other Cambodian Americans. It's a different experience. And as I teach my students, when we talk about the Asian American experience, you know, it's a different experience because you don't choose to come here. And I think when Madison Nguyen had that issue around Little Saigon and the naming of the business district, many ways that touches on the refugee experience. That's why when we were talking about that in the media, I just remember the media asking me, why does it matter, Little Saigon? You know, why can't it be something else like Vietnamese American business district? But for many of those refugees who were part of that fall of Saigon,
It touches a chord,
and it's beyond symbolism. I think for many of them, it's a longing of homeland. And so these are the dimensions that make it very, very nuanced when you look at the Asian American community. And then if you look at the more East Asian communities, like Teku mentioned, South Asians, they're immigrant. They choose to come here. They can pull their capital together. They can own more than one home. And they're vetted through a very, very stringent immigration reform policy that's become even more stringent after 9/11. And as you can imagine, you're creating a community that's very socially and economically stratified. And so it's very dangerous, obviously, to conflate Asian Americans as one, that you really have to understand each ethnic group. And when we talk about Asian American politics, then you have to understand the cities and the communities that they're in, because every city is different. We can't say San Francisco and Oakland are the same as Campbell. You have to look at the political structure, the formal rules, as we saw in Oakland with rank order choice voting. And, you know, and now this appointment process that took place with the interim mayor for San Francisco, that all this is really part of, I think, the diversity that we have to understand that is really part of California politics.
All right. Let's bring our listeners into this. And again, the number to call if you'd like to join us this hour, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Let's go now to Morton in Alameda. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I have a question about the loyalty of voters of Chinese Americans, because here we had Danny Won, who was openly gay when he ran, and he was very progressive, yet you had very conservative Chinese endorse him. So I wondered whether they are very, very, very loyal to their own Chinese candidates. Same thing, we had Lina Tam, who got embroiled in a construction scandal, everybody said she was politically dead, and I predicted that she would win, and she got the highest vote of everybody. again because of a very strong and a very loyal Chinese voting group. So I wonder whether ethnicity and politics have been studied as two separate things.
That's a really good question. You know, a similar question came up in the lieutenant governor's race this year, where Abel Maldonado, a Latino Republican, was on the ballot along with Gavin Newsom. And by all accounts and exit polls, Newsom did much better among Latino voters than Abel Maldonado did. Take you, Lee, what are your thoughts about that, that question of political identity and racial identity?
Well, you know, I think for the most part, the question about whether there's particular loyalties that Asian American voters or particular Asian national origin voters have to politicians of their group has been a hypothetical loyalty because up until recently, there really haven't been that many Asian Americans in elected office. We have to keep in mind that the background to the what's newsworthy about this show and about mayors like Kwan and Lee is that if you look nationally across all state and local offices and federal offices, persons of Asian descent still are just about 1% of all elected office holders, even though Asian Americans now probably in the 2010 census will now bump up close to about 6% of the population. If you look – so as a hypothetical loyalty, if you look at surveys and ask people – would you vote for a person of your national origin or a person who's Asian American descent if you had the opportunity to vote for them? I think about 70% of Asian Americans say that they would, and that's a reasonably high number. But if you compare to similar questions that are asked of Latino voters and of African American voters, it's not an especially high number. So I wouldn't want the reader to come away from this question thinking that Chinese Americans or Asian Americans are – you know, a group that is especially prone to be deeply, deeply loyal to politicians of their ethnic background, irrespective of what their performance is, whether they're accountable, whether they're competent, and other sorts of things that are reasonable for voters to suss out when it comes to Election Day.
James Lai, anything to add to that?
No, I think that's right on.
Just to, you know, as a follow-up, what impact, you know, there was an article this morning in the Chronicle about the Republican Party in California kind of licking its wounds after the November election and trying to figure out how to reposition itself to be more appealing to Latino voters. And the issue in that case is immigration. And I just wonder what impact you think the Republican Party's positioning on immigration nationally or in California has had on the way Asian American voters view the Republican Party, or for that matter, how they blocked the judicial nomination of Goodwin Liu, for example, from your colleague at Berkeley, Tikun Lee.
Well, you know, I think for several decades, I think in the system of two-party competition that really characterizes American politics, I think the Democratic Party has been the party that has had a very unwieldy coalition that they've tried to manage together and had a very hard time managing against a Republican Party that for the most part stood for, you know, two key issues, sort of lower taxes or the other face of that, less government, and then, you know, a certain kind of morality to politics. I think immigration is one of the a growing number of issues that really threatens to fracture the Republican Party as a coalition as well. I think when Latinos and Asian Americans look to the Republican Party on the issue of immigration, I think a lot of it really depends on where you live. If you live in California, the Republican Party on immigration looks very different than if you live maybe in North Carolina and look to the Republican Party and where their positions are on immigration there. So I think I would be reluctant to say there's a single Republican Party position on immigration because I think it's still a story that's unfolding.
And let's go back to the phones now. Again, 866-733-6786 is the number. Stacy in San Francisco, welcome.
Hi. I have a question in regards to this trend, I guess if you can call it that, of Asian American elected officials. Is it specific to Bay Area, or are we kind of seeing it throughout the United States? And if not, what is specific about what we have here, and can we replicate it across the nation? And I can just take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks. James Lai?
I think that's a great question. I think in many ways it is a national phenomenon, but we've seen Asian Americans get elected to key positions throughout the nation. In my current study, I'm looking at Asian American elected representation throughout the continental United States in key regions. I mean, throughout the you've got, you know, so many amazing stories to be told. In the Midwest, for example, you have in a medium-sized city called Eau Claire, which is in Wisconsin, central Wisconsin, you have four successive Hmong Americans getting elected to the city council, which nobody knows. In Fitchburg, Massachusetts, a suburb outside of Boston, you have a Chinese American woman becoming the first minority elected mayor of the city of Fitchburg in its 250-year history.
An aberration? But you know, four Hmong getting elected to the city council in Eau Claire, that's really something.
Yeah, one of the biggest questions that Asian Americans face, comparatively, when you talk about minority politics compared to African Americans and Latinos, particularly in the electoral realm, is can they sustain elected representation? One of the litmus tests for political power is not just getting elected, but whether you can sustain it. I think in that way, what we're seeing in San Francisco and Oakland are beginning points of that. But, you know, we're already seeing it in other contexts. And that was the point I was trying to make earlier, is that, you know, while this makes the news, we have many other instances in smaller kind of suburbs where they are doing that. And I think that to me is that evolution and that political maturation of the community, of the Asian American community, whichever community we're looking at in this particular cities that we talk about, but also the maturation of the general community in terms of accepting that this is change. And it's not always easy, as you can imagine, as new majorities form and as community formation patterns change, that change the political culture of a city. As you can imagine, there's challenges and there are growing pains with that.
Particularly, to what extent do you think, Ed Lee and Gene Kwan, I mean, they are the first. And so they may succeed, they may fail. They may be popular, they may be unpopular. Now, Ed Lee, of course, is not going to run for election. He's an interim mayor. Gene Kwan presumably will. But, you know, how important is it for those firsts, you know, to succeed, Barack Obama, for that matter? Mm-hmm. Does it matter for the future in terms of success of candidates from those communities?
Well, I mean, I think probably the thing that matters is how these pioneering politicians succeed or fail and what kind of meaning we make out of their success or failure. If somebody is – I'm not going to attach specific names, but if somebody is the first Asian American mayor of a city and you know, they fail as a result of allegations of political corruption in ways that fit with stereotypes that, you know, voters may have of Asian American politicians or how politics is conducted in different Asian countries. I think that may have, you know, longer term damaging effects than, you know, if somebody like Gene Kwan fails because, Jerry Brown wants to devolve a lot of the fiduciary responsibilities of the state down to local governments and local governments don't have the coffers to be able to handle those kinds of responsibilities. So I think a lot of the success or failure really depends on context.
Well, San Francisco now has four Asian Americans on the Board of Supervisors, Carmen Chu, David Chu, Eric Marr, and Jane Kim, who joins us now by phone from her office at City Hall. And Jane Kim, welcome to the program. You're in, I think, your second week in office. How's it going?
Good morning. Things are going quite well.
You came into office in a very, I don't know, I guess you could say tumultuous time. You had to vote on a new mayor, an interim mayor. There's a new district attorney, a lot of change in the city. And you represent a district, you replaced probably the most liberal and the most controversial member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, Chris Daley. In his district, your district now, not particularly a large number of Asian Americans compared to other districts. How do you see yourself as a Korean American representative of that district?
Well, I already served citywide as a Board of Education member. And I think, you know, one of important things for Asian Americans who are rising in leadership is showing leadership and proving public service to multiple communities. And that's something that's really important to me. And District 6 is a very diverse district. We have a diversity of class, very low income, very high income, and also a lot of immigrant communities as well. And so really trying to, you know, relate my experience to a lot of different communities.
And did you find that as a Korean American, you had a particular simpatico, you know, an entree into, say, the Chinese community that you might not have had as someone who wasn't Asian American or not? Or did you have to, you know, win over their trust just as anyone else would?
I spent 6 years as a community organizer in Chinatown, and I think a lot of my support from the Chinese American community came through the work that I did than my identity.
And so you, therefore, they knew you already.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what about being a woman? You know, does that matter at all? Does gender matter in the Asian American community? And if so, how?
I'm not sure if gender matters more in the Asian American community than in other communities in politics. I think that there are a lot of challenges in being a woman in politics, but not particular to being an Asian American woman.
James Lai, anything you think to add to that? I mean, is there a you know, a different kind of perception of Asian American women versus Asian American men, whether it's in politics or any other aspect of our culture?
I mean, I think generally speaking, you know, the perception that in the media, you know, of Asian American women, but how that translates into electoral politics is another thing. I mean, we have Nikki Haley, South Carolina governor, Asian Indian descent. So it all varies, obviously. But I think, you know, there is this perception that Asian Americans do have to combat. There are so many stereotypes out there. And I think one of the key ones that Jane mentions is, can they be leaders? And I think that that's why you need these pioneer candidates to break the glass ceiling, so to speak, show that they can be leaders, but not just, as Teku mentioned, for a particular ethnic community. No one will say that. I think now, regardless of their gender, Asian American elected officials who are successful have to build multiracial coalitions. I mean, it's clear. You just look at every successful Asian American that's been elected to the state assembly, you know, or the state senate, or in key city council elections. They are building multiracial coalitions.
Jane Kim, what did it mean to you to cast, I think as your first vote, a vote for Ed Lee as interim mayor?
I was really excited to support Ed. And actually, more than anything, it's because of his career service for San Francisco. Starting out as an attorney, doing a lot of work around labor issues, affordable housing, tenants' rights, and civil rights, and then his 20 years of service under four different mayoral administrations. I just thought he was the best candidate. I actually didn't think too much about how it was a historic decision to have the first Asian American mayor in San Francisco.
It was more just about his qualifications and the fact that he paid his dues in a way.
Yeah, I thought he was the best candidate, and I was really proud to support him. Of course, it's great that he can relate to a lot of communities that I have spent time working with, being a son of immigrant families and growing up Asian Americans. That's definitely a plus.
All right. Jane Kim, supervisor for San Francisco, District 6. Thanks so much for joining us, and good luck to you in your new job.
Thank you.
All right. And let's go back to the phones. Pam is on the line from Sacramento. Pam, welcome to Forum.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you so much. My name is Pam. I live in Sacramento, and I actually go to school in Berkeley. And this last November election, when I woke up and showed up to vote, I was just so excited to see over a dozen Asian Americans on my ballot. And I just wanted to share that in my neighborhood in Sacramento, I have now have a Asian American school board member, Daryl Wu, a city council member, Daryl Fong, my SMUD board member, that's Sacramento Municipal Utility District, the Genevieve Sharoma, my board supervisor, Representative Jimmy D, and Doris Matsui as my congresswoman.
That's right. Are you Asian American yourself?
I am, yes.
So it's... And so that gives you a little more impetus to get out there and vote, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Well, I've always been a, you know, lost voter, showed up, but it's really exciting to see, you know, members of the community, Asian American community, you're running for office. And there were, you know, actually most of the top candidates in all these local elections were Asian American.
Yeah.
So,
Pam, I'm going to let you go just because you're on a cell phone. It's breaking up a little bit, but I appreciate appreciate the call very much. We also have an email here from someone, Tom, in El Cerrito, who wanted to make sure we mentioned that Ann Chang is another Asian American. She's young. He writes, the mayor of El Cerrito. So definitely a lot. And you know her, James Lai? You're nodding.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Again, the number I'm going to give it out again if you want to join us here, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Tell us how you view the ethnicity or race of a candidate. If it's your own race or ethnicity, does it matter to you? And if it isn't, does that matter as well? We mentioned one of you, I don't remember which, mentioned sort of the ways in which Gene Kwan and Ed Lee have become mayor of their respective cities. Teku Lee in the East Bay, Gene Kwan became mayor through ranked choice voting, which was controversial. You know, she came in second after the first round of voting to Don Parada, and then there were several rounds, and finally, she beat him, I think, 51-49%. Does that what effect does that have, do you think? Does that influence the way she's seen as mayor? Does it influence her credibility in any way or the challenge that she faces?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think ranked choice voting is still relatively new terrain, even for political scientists who've been thinking about these things for a long time. But I think one thing that I would caution people from assuming is that because it's ranked choice voting and Gene Kwan won largely, I think, through being a lot of people's second and third favorite candidate, that therefore it's a less legitimate mayoralty. And then related to that, I think there's also – I think it's natural to think about ranked choice voting and think that, well, a lot of people are more likely to be resistant to thinking of Gene Kwan as their mayor because she was their second or third choice. I think one of the things that politics is really driven by, especially in the sort of polarized environment that characterizes a lot of American politics today, is less by people who may have had a preference for one person or another, but more by people who really are against somebody. And I think one of the things that ranked choice voting aims to ensure is that fewer people will be dissatisfied by whoever winds up being elected mayor. And I think that in itself carries a certain kind of legitimacy that's worth keeping in mind.
It's certainly a kind of coalition building.
Right.
When you're building a coalition with the other people who are in the race. And James Lai, what about Ed Lee? I mean, Ed Lee comes into office, I don't think probably a month ago anyone knew who Ed Lee was, really.
Yeah.
And he certainly hadn't given any thought to being mayor. Right. He was in Hong Kong when the whole idea surfaced, and he was called apparently by Rose Pak, who was a very well-known, longtime Chinatown activist, a powerhouse in her own right, controversial as well. What about the way he's become mayor? What difference does that make?
Well, I think, you know, it was obviously, for those following the process, a very political process. And for Ed, I think, you know, it was key to have, I think, key members, obviously, on this board of supervisors that were from the Asian American community. I mean, as you mentioned, there are four. And I think that plays a role. I mean, this is why we talk about, you know, why descriptive representatives are so key, because if you can get them within the power structure, that allows for political change. And that's what Teku mentioned with substantive change in many ways. And as you can imagine, being at the table, helping make decisions like that, is a big difference than being on the outside looking in. And I think that in many ways, that's part of that process, is the backdoor politics that happened and the negotiations and Rose Pak coming in as well, having an influence on that, shows clearly that Asian Americans are on the mind of key leaders in San Francisco.
And of course, Teku Lee, that kind of backroom dealing happens all the time among other, you know, Gavin Newsom, you might say, became mayor in that way. I mean, he was appointed to the Board of Supervisors by Willie Brown and supported by Dianne Feinstein and all kinds of insiders in the Caucasian community, if you want to call it that way, describe it that way. But, you know, is there a different way in which it's viewed when it is a minority community, in this case, the Asian American community, sort of calling in chits, you know, pulling the levers of power to get somebody in there who they support, who they know?
Well, you know, I would push a slightly different point, which is a riff off of Hillary Clinton's idea that it takes a village to really make social change, which is it takes a party to really make a elected official. And I think for a long time, the underrepresentation of Asian Americans in in positions of elected office, has a lot to do with the system of two-party competition and the mm-hmm. sense of a lot of local Democratic and Republican Party elites to avoid having Asian Americans on the ballot as potential candidates and elected officials. And I think that's the real sort of tide change that you're seeing now, is starting in California, but also, as mm-hmm. Professor Lai pointed out, all across different localities around the country, a greater willingness of at least the Democratic Party in a lot of the instances that I can think of Asian Americans as adding positive value to a candidacy.
We're getting a little short on time, but James Lai, I wonder what you think about, you know, not to stereotype, but within the Asian community, there are many folks who say, you know, don't stick out too much. You know, you want to kind of do, you know, work hard, but don't make, you know, don't rise to the top. Don't make a lot of noise. Just kind of mm-hmm. quietly do your hard work and you will succeed. Is what we're seeing here, the rise of more visibility among Asian American candidates and others, I don't want to say overcoming, but a change from that kind of attitude about really being first or being out there, putting yourself out there in a way that maybe, you know, people, other generations, earlier generations wouldn't have?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you look at the background of Gene and Ed in particular. I mean, these two individuals were part of the progressive movements of the 70s. They fought for ethnic studies. They fought for immigrant rights, whether it was fair wages, fair housing. They've been part of these grassroots movements. And I think, you know, quite the opposite. They're examples of, I think, progressive politics and radical politics, anti-establishment politics that have come of age politically, that I think you're seeing that strand. And I think that's an important story to be told in these two cases, you know, and you're seeing that also with other Asian elected officials on the Board of Supervisors being connected to progressive organizations like Eric Marr, being connected to the Asian Law Caucus, as well as Ed Lee, or the, you know, Jane Kim, who was just on the talking to us, being part of the Chinatown Community Development Center. These are examples of that progressive politics. So there's that element for sure.
And next year, later this year, we may have four Asian Americans running for mayor of San Francisco.
Right.
And so there are lots more to talk about, no doubt, in the coming months. Thanks so much, James Lai, Associate Professor of Political Science at Santa Clara University and author of Asian American Political Action. And Taekoo Lee, Professor and Chair of the Department of Political Science and a Professor of Law at UC Berkeley. Thanks for being here. And thanks also
earlier in
the hour to Jane Kim and Evan Lowe as well. Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell, with production assistance from Pat Yallen and Chris Russo. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.